December 29th, Amherst Island will be participating in the 124th annual Christmas Bird Count. The regular meeting location at the school has changed this year. Participants will be meeting at St. Paul's Church. Facilitated by a network of nature groups in Ontario, over 50 groups are participating within the province. Bird counts across the world will run from December 14th to January 5th, 2024. Scientists use the data collected to monitor the health and status of resident and migratory birds over time. This helps develop conservation strategies for species in decline and their habitats. Nature Network organizer at Ontario Nature, Leslie Rudy, notes the level of consistency within the Christmas bird count and their post-pandemic operations.
One of the things that, of course, we try to do is keep it relatively consistent so that it's comparable across years. Certainly, I think, you know, now that we're in the past the worst of the pandemic, maybe let's say, I think that, you know, we expect to get bigger numbers out than we did for a few years there.
Rudy mentioned there are more kids bird counts happening every year.
There are several kids counts happening this year, which is kind of, again, a thing that existed before but was a little bit on hold. So that's good to see.
Rudy went on to explain the Christmas bird count is a community effort.
This is such a great collaborative effort of community scientists across the continent. These are most people that participate are not, you know, hardcore scientists or biologists themselves, but this is an opportunity for them to contribute to science. And it's the data that we get is so much more than we'd be able to do with, you know, formal science. So it's just a great collaborative effort. So many people participating to get great data and help inform bird conservation across the continent. So it's just really kind of a really cool thing that happens.
Local birder and compiler for the Christmas Bird Count, Janet Scott, explains the Christmas Bird Count has been happening on Amherst Island for 33 years. She explains the story behind the coverage area for Amherst Island.
It was kind of interesting because they divide the whole country into circles. And our Amherst Island, my ex-husband and I birded here a lot before we moved here. And the wonderful owls of Amherst Island were never counted in the Christmas bird count because we weren't included in the 15-kilometer circle from Kingston. It was just the bar from the end of the island. So Ron Weir, who's the author of Birds of the Kingston Area and a very active birder at the time, and my husband lobbied to create a circle that included Amherst Island. And the center of our circle is actually Yorkshire Island, which is out in Lake Ontario, in order to get a circle that was about 15 kilometers. But we don't go there. But we do cover Amherst Island, and that's been happening since 1990.
Scott noted a reminder for the change of the meeting location.
We get over 40 people that come to help us count that day. And we just want to remind everyone that it's now going to be based at St. Paul's Church, which is on Stella 40-foot. So instead of going to the school where we used to meet for the last few years, it's now going to start at St. Paul's Presbyterian Church.
Scott explains the setup process for the Christmas bird count on Amherst Island.
Bonnie Livingstone and I, unfortunately, she was willing to help me ever since 2000. But she creates these lists, and then we sit down and we map out the island and divide our volunteers into groups.
Scott went on to note some of the differences that happened during the pandemic.
We had to make differences in the pandemic. Now, there we couldn't have mainland birders coming over to help us. So what we did was we canvassed Amherst Island, and we got a lot of volunteers from the island, and they went out in their family groups, their bubbles sort of thing. So it might be a husband and wife, or it might be a husband and wife and their children, because they were already a family bubble during COVID. And then we would give them sections to cover that were near their own house. So that way they had place to get warm, a place to use the bathroom, etc. And so there were smaller groups instead of sending out a group of two cars, which would usually be eight people in a group, it was down to probably four people in a group, and we divided the island up.
Scott notes the participants from Amherst Island have a unique way of meeting up after the bird count.
We had got into the habit because on the mainland, for instance, the Kingston area or in Napanee Circle, when they do the bird count, they get together after at Tim Hortons or somewhere and discuss, you know, what special birds they found, and everybody becomes a group. Well, in here on the island, we couldn't do that because our winters, we have no restaurant during the winters and no outdoor washrooms that were available. Now, fortunately, the ferry dock has flush toilets, which has made our life a little easier. But we needed a place to meet, and that's why we started having it at the school. And then Bonnie and I would arrange for coffee and orange juice for them before they started out. And because there was no place for them to eat after, we started having a sort of potluck lunch. And many of the birders bring things and add to that meal. Plus, Bonnie and I always make sure there's a vegetarian chili and a vegetarian soup, and that there's also regular soups and chilies to warm up our birders.
Scott went on to note that all participants are well fed.
We've already had quite a few people, regular folks, who've responded that usually come to help. So, and already people on the island that are birding friends of ours have been volunteering. I'll make biscuits, or I'll make cookies for it, or I'll bring a soup, you know. So we know that if you come to Amherst Island, you get fed.
Scott noted the unique weather changes for bird counts on Amherst Island.
We have taken birders out for the Christmas count when it's 20 below and a wind chill factor. You know, so it really is a variety. And, you know, it can be very exposed. You've got the lake ice, you've got water, and it can be pretty cold. And the temperature can be different. You can drive north a little bit and you'll get snow, whereas right near the lake it's so cold or it's warmer. It's different climate entirely between Millhaven and, say, Camden East.
Scott explained why Amherst Island is known for some of its numbers in the bird count.
I'm hoping there's lots of short-eared owls here already. They've been flying in the fields here on Front Road, and I also saw one down on South Shore. So they are here, and it's one of the best places in the world to see short-eared owls is here. It's hard to believe if you think about our little island. But we are famous because we can get owls here that people don't get owls other places. And so we've had many of the species of owls, as many as 8 to 10 different owls have been on Amherst Island. And we don't always get them every bird count, but that's the draw.
Scott spoke about the short-haired owls on Amherst Island.
You'll see foxes jumping on the snow to scare the voles out from under the crust. And you'll see these short-haired owls flapping. They have an interesting flight mode. I call it dancing, but they dance across the field hunting for these voles. So that is one of the reasons that people come to Amherst Island.
Scott went on to explain the migration of snowy owls.
We've had years with no snowy owls, and we've had years with 50. So it depends, again. If there's forest fires in the north, then the seeds in the conifers are short in supply, which means that the rodents die off because they don't have the food. So there's not the squirrels and the chipmunks. And so the owls have to look for food south. And that will drive them south if there's no food in the north. They don't need to migrate. They're warm enough. They only migrate south, these snowy owls, when they're short of food in the north. And then they come south. And that, when we get them sitting out here on poles. And we're expecting them at any time, but we haven't seen any. Well, I haven't heard anyone report.
Scott mentioned the most interesting sighting of late.
The exciting report for this week was Warren Kilpatrick on the third concession got 200 snow geese came in, and snow geese migrate south, and they will seed here. It's when they had just cut a corn crop. And so they came in with the Canada geese and the mallards into that field near his place to feed. And he counted 200 of them. And that's a sight to see, I can tell you.
Scott noted the area is internationally known for a certain type of waterfowl.
The ducks come down here, and as long as we've got open water, we've got northern ducks here. And we have the largest number of scop in the world reported here between Amherst Island and Wolf Island. So we are considered an important bird area internationally because of our scop.
Scott noted a number of other bird counts in the area.
There's quite a few bird counts in the area. There's one at Napanee, and there's Moscow, and there's Kingston, and Prince Edward County. And so, but for some reason, Blenheim, Ontario, usually gets the highest number of birds in the Christmas bird count.
Scott noted the difference between the Christmas bird count and other bird counts on the island.
Well, here on the island, over the years, they've kept bird lists. So these could be from any time during the year, spring, summer, fall. But I know that they host 285 species for Amherst Island that have been seen here at least once. Whereas the Christmas bird count, we're getting around 50 species.
Scott noted the numbers from previous Christmas bird counts on Amherst Island.
In 1990, we got 63 different species, so it must have been a mild year. In 91, they only got 51 species. In 2004, only 36. Now, I'm not sure if that's the year. One year, it turned suddenly cold, but the water was open. So the steam that comes off the water and fogs in, I think they call it Arctic fog or something like that. And it happens once in a while and you can't see anything. And that particular year, we didn't even get a Canada goose until noon hour when it flew over and it was honking and it flew over the school so we could count it by sound. But we couldn't see a bird, couldn't see anything. It was miserable. So we have miserable years and we have lovely years. So anywhere around 50, 60, really good if we can get it up around 70 species. So that makes it exciting.
Scott noted those with mobility issues or those who can't leave the house are still able to participate in the Christmas bird count.
People who can't go out, they can do what's called a feeder watch. And we have quite a few people on Amherst Island that are good enough to do a feeder watch for us that day. So whether you're getting snowy owls or whether you're looking at nuthatches, you can still count and be part of the Christmas bird count.
Scott went on to explain the history of the Christmas bird count.
There were 27 gentlemen who were interested in birding who got together in 1900. And Frank Chapman was their leader. And they established later on the Audubon Society, so that's where it came from. But in 1900, people would get together at Christmas time, and you can understand that in a big family, they'd all be at a farm somewhere, and they need to feed the people that are staying with them. So they would have a thing called a shoot. And the winner of the shoot was the one that killed the most birds that day. So they went out and killed birds, and I'm sure they ate a lot of them because pheasant and wild turkeys and so on would have been on their menu. But Frank Chapman saw that it was kind of like a waste because they killed a lot of the little birds as well. And he started what he called the Christmas bird count, which would happen around Christmas every year, and you would count. Not shoot was his policy.
Scott noted how much the Christmas bird count has grown.
There was very few of them, just these 27 men. But by the 1920, there was a few more bird counts, and now it is like spread right across North America, Central America. In fact, one year there were some scientists in Antarctica, and they did a Christmas bird count at Christmas time as well.
Scott went on to note why Christmas time was chosen for the bird count.
The reason they chose Christmas is because the migratory birds have kind of settled down. You're not going to get a sudden difference between the 20th of December and the 25th of December. You're not going to get huge numbers of birds coming in or birds going out. If they settle down, and if they count that 3 weeks around Christmas. So Christmas Day is your center of your Christmas bird count.
Scott noted the number of participating counts across the world.
It doesn't just happen here. So no matter where you are, there are 370 counts at least in Canada, 90 in Latin America and the Pacific Islands. And there's thousands of people out these 3 weeks looking at birds, watching their feeders.
Scott explains how bird counts help define trends and notes how the prevalence of cardinals has changed over the years.
You can start to see trends. When I was young, it was very rare. Now, mind you, I lived in the Ottawa Valley, but it was very rare to see a cardinal. And now, almost every subdivision in Kingston has cardinals, and they live here year-round. But once the winter hits, they start to feed, and they come to your feeder, and they're so showy that everybody will say, I've got cardinals, I've got cardinals. And it's, you know, it's things have changed, and it's because as our winters got milder, more birds survived that had pushed north. And when they survive, then the following year they have young, and those young think that this is their home, so they stay, and that's how our population has moved north very slowly. But they were a bird of, say, the Georgia and the Carolinas. But now they're here, and no one questions a cardinal.
Scott finished with a note for new participants.
If you're an unfamiliar birder, we'll find you a very experienced birder that you can travel with, and you'll learn as you go.
For CJAI and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.